This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I think it might be time to reprise The Sound of Anxiety, otherwise known as the Shepherd Tone. Named for Robert Shepherd, it's an optical illusion for your ears. By layering different notes together, it sounds like the pitch is ever ascending, but actually it's staying exactly the same, like an auditory barber's pole. I thought about that as the Civil War talk began to peak. The warnings seem to be increasingly, piercingly insistent, but is it just an illusion? Merely a riff on January 6th? A journalistic trend. Takes on incipient civil war are many and varied, ranging from the belief that it could happen any day to those who call it war about, well, not much. That's how Politico founding editor John Harris put it. The transcendent issue of this time, he wrote, is the belief that one half of the country suspects the other half is contemptuous of them and responds with contempt in return. Seinfeld was not really, as was often said, a show about nothing. It demonstrated instead that with the right characters and frame of mind, you can make a show about anything that might happen in daily life. Donald Trump has shown that you can use the same approach to create a national crack-up. The violent rabble that crashed the Capitol a year ago showed that crack-ups are fertile ground for crackpots. Charlie Warzel writes the Galaxy Brain newsletter for and otherwise contributes to The Atlantic, and he thinks that many in the press and political establishment are so focused on the supply side of our information morass, the grifters and the opportunists who produce online garbage and the platforms that distribute it, that they fail to consider the misery that might be creating a demand for it.
I think that misery is a really powerful force in American life right now. When you look at the fact that American life expectancy has taken a negative turn in recent years, if you look at the fact that between 2005 and 2019, an average of 70,000 Americans died annually from deaths of despair, that's, I believe, much higher during the pandemic.
We're talking about by overdose or suicide.
And we're talking about widening racial wealth gap. There's a number of economic and social factors, I think, that are causing people to feel trapped, to feel alienated, to feel miserable, to feel extreme distrust of institutions and experts of all kinds. These are very real forces. They create this feeling of loneliness, of alienation, of misery. And what we do know from the social science of misery is that misery doesn't just love company, it loves miserable company. And our platforms supply a steady stream of incendiary content and misinformation and hateful language. Mm. They're also powerful forces for people to organize, find that miserable right. company, and then also inflict that misery back on other people and sort of get that feeling of autonomy that comes from that.
But you say there's a large constituency of people that believes this civil war talk on the right and on the left, it's a kind of a game. What are you hearing and where?
Well, I'll ground this in the notion that I've spent basically since 2016 looking at the online elements of the far right in some capacity, from the shock jocks to sort of, you know, the foot soldiers. I've seen them up close. I've spoken with them. So I come at this knowing that there are very real people behind our political rift and discontent. I think a lot of it comes from the glut of content around the anniversary of January 6th. And I've seen this sort of reflexive pundit response to say, okay, yes, it was bad, but let's put this in context here. We are not looking at 1860s, everyone dresses up in blue and gray and meets at dawn on the battlefield and draws rifles. This isn't the Civil War. Mm-hmm. And that the conflict isn't even all that legible. What is it that we're fighting for? Are we just driven mad over Donald Trump?
And this was something you saw recently in an article by Politico founder John Harris, but not just there.
Right. This week, New York Times opinion columnist, my former colleague Ross Douthat, wrote a piece talking about, let's not invent a civil war where there is none. Are we on the brink of civil war, or is this really alarmism? And siding on the notion that it is pretty much an alarmist attitude to cry civil war. I think that there's a real feeling around this pundit reflex that this is the rational position, and that those who are invoking that phrase civil war are part of a doomer mindset where it's sort of in vogue for people to suggest that the sky is falling, whether that's with climate change or an economic crisis or obviously now our politics and the quote-unquote fate of democracy.
And you worry that this kind of poo-pooing, I guess Jay Rosen, that's the second time I've quoted him this hour, would call this the savvy style of inside the Beltway journalism, that this attitude could, quote, foreshadow an institutional backlash that portrays those worried about insurgent violence as hysterical neurotics.
I think that we're at the beginnings of this. And again, this may all be a reaction to reflections on the one-year anniversary of January 6th. But I do think that there is this pundit reflex to tell everyone to remain calm, you know, that savvy style. I think it's a very detached understanding from the reality of everyday American life. I don't think that people outside the pundit industrial complex feel very calm about the state of American politics, if they are paying attention at all. There's quite a lot to be alarmed about. And I think that alarmism in general isn't the negative thing that the pundits say it is. In fact, I believe it's a bulwark against a sort of doomer mindset. You're taking some agency for yourself. And I think it can lead to activity, to activism. It leads to stagnation if you just sort of assume that things are going to sort themselves out. It's going to be fine.
You wrote something in your piece that I loved because I love when journalists show how human we are. You said you yourself assumed the savvy pose back in 2019 in a New York Times column when you used flippant language about the idea of this country heading towards an 1860s-style civil war, even though you were concerned about insurgency at the time. You said that it was because you were worried about sounding alarmist.
I've struggled with this mightily over the last couple of years. I feel like I ping-pong between feeling alarmist and not feeling alarmed enough. And that's been very difficult in my work. When you encounter people who really do believe that the American experiment has kind of run its course and it's time to break that up by any means necessary, or that feel the tenets of democracy don't really matter as long as your side is winning. When you meet those people up front and you see them, and this goes, you know, beyond our immediate electoral politics to the threat of climate change, we are living in a sort of existential moment, I believe, that is quite harrowing. But at the same time, journalists are supposed to put everything into context and coolly and calmly explain the moment. That becomes very difficult. So I've struggled quite a bit with this. And frankly, I'm a little tired of it because we spend so much time trying to find the exact right way to frame the proportionality of the crisis that we waste all this energy that can be spent addressing the crisis.
I thought it was interesting how you did a kind of switcheroo and said that the savvy depictors of the moment as overblown were actually the real doomers.
Privileging extreme calm in the face of, you know, an existential threat, I believe that that's the most nihilistic thing that you can do. You're privileging the status quo over everything else. And feeling alarmed means that you're taking it seriously. I don't think it means you're being hysterical. And I think if you're taking it seriously, you're trying to find the root causes. And you're trying to understand what can help ease some of the alienation in American life, some of the economic precarity that's causing people to run into the arms of people who are selling an anti-democratic message. That reflexive pundit backlash, it's not interested in grappling with that problem. It's more interested in sounding calm and rational.
And savvy.
And savvy. The piece that kicked this off in Politico suggested that we were in a Seinfeldian civil war about nothing. Who can even say what it is that we're fighting over? And I think that that's bogus. There are so many reasons why Americans are alienated and frustrated, feel disempowered and angry. And I think that dismissing all of that with a kind of 30,000-foot view of people are mad because Donald Trump, I think that's the doomer path, because it suggests you don't want to engage seriously with the world around you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, as always, for having me.
Charlie Warzel writes Galaxy Brain, a newsletter about technology, media, and politics. He's also a contributing writer to The Atlantic. Coming up, the consequences of thoroughly misunderstanding the past when assessing the present. And I'm talking about the way distant past. This is On the Media.